falls, it manages to grab my free arm. I twist away, but its grip is too tight. It pulls me into the flames with the strength of several men. Sparks fly as we roll into the heart of the blaze. We land on top of each other, and as the shade burns, so do I. Pain consumes me as my flesh sizzles, searing up my hands, my arms, my face, searing everything. I wish to death that I could float up out of my body, just leave this burnt shell behind. I'm not sure which of us howls loudest. Distantly, Evander yells my name, followed by something with a high, urgent ring to it. But the crackling fire, the shade's furious screeches as it burns, and my thudding heart make it impossible to guess the words. Hands grip my shoulders, tearing me away from the shade and the flames. Evander's hands. He's going to get burned. Probably already is. And I don't want him to know this pain. I try to shove him back, but he hangs on. And together, we free ourselves of the fire. I lie on my back, gasping, letting the cool flagstones of the courtyard soothe my hot skin. My skirts are blazing, and the smell of singed hair fills my nose and throat, choking me. But Evander, despite the burns on his arms and hands, beats out the flames around me first. The shade staggers out of the blaze a moment later on bony legs, its scrap of remaining flesh melting off like candle wax. It shrinks farther and farther into the stone floor as its legs burn to ashes on the wind. Soon, it's nothing but a puddle of blackened bone and rubble. For a moment, there's silence apart from the hissing and popping of the fire. The crowd collectively holds its breath, not yet ready to believe the monster is really gone. I did it, I whisper to myself, stunned. I've killed my first shade. When Evander pulls me against his chest and shouts for Daniel, I realize I'm shaking. You were lucky, Daniel says as he heals my singed face and arms, then turns to address Evander's burns. Your dress took the worst of the heat, but I'm afraid it's ruined. There's no magic anyone can work on that disaster. I nod, but don't have the energy to talk as I rest in Evander's arms in the middle of the courtyard. Palace guards rush over with buckets, first to put out the bonfire, then to douse the spot several feet away where the shade dissolved into a pool of ash. Gradually, once all the partygoers have been accounted for, my friends and Master Simbri gather around me. That was a completely idiotic thing to do, Simeon tells me, laying a hand on my shoulder. Idiotic. Seriously. It gives me a shaky grin. Wish I'd thought of it. I grin back. Just another day's work, right? Another day's work indeed. You were amazing, Sparrow, Master Simbri says shakily. My friends echo her. And when Valoria kneels beside me and wordlessly throws her arms around me, I know for certain it was worth the risk. Moments later, a few of the wildings poke their heads out of doors and windows, then send their staff to begin clearing up the tremendous mess. Look, a fair-haired boy, one of the wilding servants, sifts cautiously through the shade's ashes and holds up a gleaming chunk of gold. Even from several feet away, I can tell it's a signet ring. This belonged to Duke Bevan, the boy says slowly, his brow furrowing. But? Simeon locks eyes with me, alarmed. How did the Duke become a shade? Chapter 8. The nobles in the courtyard stare at me and my friends with a mixture of fear and dislike. The same nobles who, an hour earlier, merrily greeted us like old friends. Only Lyda Crowther doesn't shrink from us, waving to let us know she's all right before turning to help a girl in a party dress who's limping. With a last look at Evander, she guides the child indoors. One man whispers to a few of his companions, then steps forward. From where I sit, he looks like a giant bat, tall and gaunt in his black dress robes. That's Count Reichiel, Valoria whispers to me.
Let me try to understand what's happened here, the Count says, making each word loud and slow, no doubt for the benefit of those listening at the palace windows. Duke Bevan went missing in Dirin City, and we sent necromancers to find him, but they failed. Then the Duke turns up here, many miles from home. As a shade, another man finishes from behind the Count. Almost like someone wanted him to become a monster.
He locks his evergreen eyes on Master Simbri, who presses her lips together like she's holding back a retort.
Like someone wanted to use him as a weapon and planned to unleash him when the palace was busy and crowded.
Count Reichiel nods.
And let's not forget, you were late to the party, Simbri.
The words spread a chill across my skin. The lack of emotion in the Count's voice tells me he really believes the woman I've known for most of my life is capable of murder.
You're supposed to keep control over the dead. What happened?
A dark-haired young woman moves to the Count's side, turning Duke Bevan's signet ring over in her shaking hands, making me wonder if she's one of his descendants.
Let me guess. Are our newest master necromancers starved for business?
She glares at us through streaming eyes.
Did you set up this attack so we'd hire you to raise the victims, knowing we can afford to pay a pretty fortune to have our families together again? Perhaps I'm mistaken, but then you'll have to spell out your demands a bit more clearly.
Here's a demand, Jax growls, sauntering toward the young woman until they're practically nose to nose. Shut your mouth.
Valoria sucks in a breath, and my pulse quickens as I follow her to gaze at Count Reichiel.
Are you threatening us?
The Count's eyes flash as he beckons to a group of nearby palace guards. They march forward, shielding the Count and other nobles from Jax. The few wildings, standing apart from the wall of guards, quickly scurry away from us, to the safety of bows and blades and strength in numbers. Valoria and Hadrian's three younger siblings, two boys and a girl, are among them. But Valoria doesn't follow. She loops her arm through mine, making it clear that she's not about to leave the six of us, me, Evander, Simbri, Daniel, Jax, and Simeon, any more alone than we already are.
No one around here is thinking logically, Valoria mutters. Master Simbri is the only necromancer who went to Dirn City.
She raises her voice like she wants the rest of the palace to hear her.
Assuming the Duke became a shade, and she's to blame, she doesn't have the strength to drag him all the way here. And if she paid someone to help her, which sounds even more ridiculous, where would she have hidden the Duke that no one would have heard him screeching before the party?
Even if Simbri were capable of something like that, which I highly doubt she is, Prince Hadrian emerges from the palace and sweeps into the courtyard, turning to face us without a single glance at his relatives. The other necromancers had nothing to do with it. They've been enjoying the party all night, just like the rest of you. I never thought I'd be this glad to hear the prince's voice. I trust our mages. Every last one. Hadrian puts one hand on Master Simbri's shoulder, the other on Evander's. And so should you. But the prince's relatives don't seem willing to take his word on the matter.
Do you have anything to say for yourselves?
The dark-haired young woman with Duke Bevan's ring sneers.
Or will you just let the prince and princess speak for you?
I have a few words, Simeon shoots back. You can all go straight. I can't believe this,
Evander interrupts, glowering at the many accusing faces directed our way.
Sparrow just saved your lives, damn near getting herself killed in the process. How can you think we had anything to do with what happened here?
For a moment, silence hangs over us.
If the necromancers aren't responsible,
a woman's smooth voice calls,
who is?
I'd love to know the answer to that myself. It has to be someone outside the law. A criminal, paid to disrupt this party by someone who hates the king or even the duke, who certainly had his enemies. Or the guilty person could be above the law, like the nobles who stand here accusing us. Some look thoughtful. Others move about restlessly, like the tension in the air is too much for them. And a few continue to stare at us with open revulsion. Finally, as I watch Master Simbri's eyes shift from anger to hurt, I find my voice again.
You've always trusted us before.
That isn't the half of it, as they well know.
Until tonight, every one of these people has held us in the same high esteem as Carthia's best bards, as the wealthiest silk traders from the southern provinces, as royalty. Now they're treating us like a couple of pox-ridden beggars from the ashes.
I clench my fists at my sides, resisting the urge to shout. A glance at Evander helps me steady myself before I speak again.
You realize none of your beloved dead would be here without us, don't you? Not even
me.
A scratchy voice finishes.
Yes. Thank you, Sparrow.
King Wilding glides into view, flanked by two other masked and shrouded figures.
I've heard enough nonsense for one evening.
He turns to face his subjects, his family.
These mages?
He spreads his arms, his long black sleeves hanging down like a crow's wings.
Remain our beloved guests, and a vital part of my reign. You will continue to treat them with respect. If you do not wish to spend the next 10 years admiring my dungeon walls.
Valoria beams at the king.
He's not so bad sometimes, she whispers. For a cranky, great, 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 well, eldest grandfather.
What happened to Duke Bevan is a tragedy,
the king adds in a voice like dead leaves scraping across the courtyard.
And to the others who have died or been injured in this massacre,
he adds.
But I did not give in to fear and speculation in life, and I won't in death either. We will carry on as we always have,
the king continues, raising his raspy voice and reclaiming my attention.
And we will look to our necromancers, now more than ever, to find answers and keep us safe from shades. For Carthia, for us all.
For Garthia, the young nobles echo, somewhat grudgingly, in my opinion.
For us all.
The king claps his hands once.
Good. Now, everyone head to your rooms. I think we can all agree the party is over.
As the royal procession disappears into the palace, Simbri draws the four of us newest master necromancers close. Valoria and Daniel hang back but stay near, no doubt listening too.
We need to get to the bottom of this threat, whatever it may be, and contain it swiftly. Not only for the safety of Garthia, but to uphold the name of necromancer.
First, though, Simbri smiles wanly. We must get some rest before the hunt tomorrow. She narrows her eyes.
Remember, if you try anything without me, I'll wring your necks faster than you can say Deadlands.
The group disperses, only Evander and Valoria remaining by my side.
She's wise. If I don't head to bed now, I'll fall asleep right here.
The princess smiles as she turns to leave.
Thanks again for what you did tonight. Maybe I'll see you again soon. Hadrian will mope around the palace for months if you miss his birthday celebration.
I shake my head. Disappointing Hadrian is the last thing on my mind right now. Sure, I'll be there.
And Odessa?
The princess calls over her shoulder.
Whatever you're planning with the others tomorrow, be careful, all right?
Touching two fingers to my brow in a salute, I call back,
of course.
The moment Valoria disappears through the rose embossed double doors, I grab Evander's hands and pull him to the quietest spot in the courtyard, behind the empty tables that so recently held the feast. His eyes look more violet than blue by the flickering torchlight as they gaze into mine. I run my fingertips over his cheeks, letting the roughness of his jaw graze my skin, making my heart beat at double its usual pace. I want to kiss him. Whether his mother might see us and ban me from her manor, I don't care right now. But there's so much to say first.
Something's always in our way, he says,
sharing my thoughts.
Sparrow, when I saw you fall into that fire.
He pulls me closer, his hands steady despite everything the last few days have thrown at us.
I thought I'd lost you. Just for a moment, but that was enough for me to understand I never want to feel like that again.
Everything. The clatter of plates being stacked, the routine motions of the servants, fades away until there's nothing but Evander in me. And I'm right where I belong. When I look into his eyes, I get the same feeling I have whenever I walk into Death's Convent after a long day. If a person can be a home, then he's mine.
Tonight made me realize something,
he whispers against my ear, making me shiver.
Me too.
My throat tightens at what I'm about to say, but Evander beats me to it.
We're stronger together. I could never walk away.
He strokes a hand through my hair, shaking loose bits of ash from the fire.
I'm not getting on a boat without you. Not tomorrow. Not in a year. We don't get forever.
No room for mistakes, I murmur. All we have is now. The necromancer's ultimate sacrifice, always in the back of our minds.
Exactly. And it would be the worst mistake of my life not to spend every day I'm given with you and the dead who need me.
He pulls me tightly against him, and for a moment, we say nothing. United by our love of the job, and so much more. What are you getting at? I say at last, drawing back to look into his eyes again. Evander smiles, grimly determined.
We're going to move to our rooms at the palace, whether my mother likes it or not. We've put off starting our lives together long enough on her account.
He traces a thumb along the edge of my jaw, making me all the more impatient for his kiss. But what about your dream of seeing other shores? What about the island? There's no way I could go with him now. Not with everything that's been going on.
Avenging Master Nicanor's death and finding his killer before anyone else gets hurt is far more important.
He tilts his head.
You, of all people, should know.
Of course I know. For the first time tonight, my grin doesn't feel forced or unnatural. I just wanted to hear you say it. But Van, I put a finger to his lips to keep him from interrupting. Something doesn't feel right. I glance to the spot where the shade burned, a dark stain on the gray flagstones, then back to Evander. What if we're up against something we can't handle?
Odessa, Sparrow. I've met a few people who couldn't handle you, but never the other way around.
Evander holds up his hands, and I link my fingers through his.
It's the killer who should be worried, not you.
He leans forward until our lips almost touch.
So after tomorrow evening's trip to the Deadlands, we'll head to the manor to pack our things, and then it's off to the palace. What do you say? One last job before our life together really begins?
One last job, I echo. Evander smiles hungrily and pulls me toward our palace rooms, the ones I've always wished we'd use.
Consider tonight a practice run.
The next day, the five of us wait on a hill overlooking the sea, just out of sight of the palace, watching for the last smoldering ember of sun to dip beneath the horizon, for the gates to shine their seductive blue, calling us into the Deadlands. Jax paces restlessly over a bed of wildflowers, late-season marigolds. With no graves in sight, they aren't a warning from the Deadlands of grief to come, but perhaps a sign that nature somehow understands our sorrow and wants to acknowledge it. Swinging his sword like he's practicing for a sparring match, Jax grumbles,
"It's not fair."
He turns, slicing upward at an imaginary monster.
"Evander's got Sparrow, which means he'll find the shade first. And he actually saw the blasted thing, so he'll recognize it when he sees it. The rest of us..."
He pauses, gesturing to Simeon and Master Simbri with his blade.
"Are about to have the most boring stroll of our lives. I don't see why we have to split up."
"To cover more ground," Master Simbri answers, never taking her eyes from the sea. "You know how vast the Deadlands are. Now, does everyone have a whistle? And the liquid fire potions I bought us? And enough honey, in case you get hungry?" Simeon wiggles his eyebrows and winks at me. But I know he's as grateful as I am that Master Simbri's thought of everything. As the sun disappears, Jax calls,
"There's our ride to the Deadlands!"
He points his blade toward a glimmer of blue on the crest of the next hill. We begin to climb, a gnawing feeling in the pit of my stomach growing stronger with every step. Even once we kill the shade, we won't have all the answers. We won't know what brought Master Nicanor into the Deadlands that night. Or whom.
No one breathes a word until we're near the gate.
Whistle if you even think you sense the shade, Master Sibri commands, turning to Evander and me. She'll be traveling with Jax and Simeon, acting as navigator. She's not me, but she's better than either of them at sensing the Deadlands' subtle shifts. When we nod, she gives us a tense smile and murmurs, "Well, good luck." She kisses my cheek, then Evander's, and strides through the gate.
"Just so you know, I'm going to find the monster and burn it before you're 2 steps out of the gate."
Jack slaps Evander on the back, and Evander punches him in return. They can joke around all they like, but I can't bring myself to join in. We've all watched the Masters kill a shade or two during training, and now I've fought one on my own. But the shades that have lurked in the Deadlands longest are far stronger than newly made ones like Duke Bevan from last night. The oldest shades are towering, terrible corpses, rotted past recognition. Things that stalk the deepest corners of a nightmare. Simeon rolls his eyes at Jax and Evander's bizarre male punching ritual, then gives me a quick hug. "See you in a blink, sister." He and Jax disappear through the gate, leaving Evander and me alone on the hill. I sense something staring at us from the berry bushes, and catch sight of a creature's liquid brown eyes. They blink once, then vanish. Reminded of the way the shade watched us from the shadows not long ago, I grab Evander's hand and pull him back before he steps into the gate. Evander stops and follows my gaze. A mother deer and her 2 fawns prance out of the bushes. His lips quirk as he studies me.
"Hey, Sparrow."
He wraps his arms around my waist, holding me tighter than last night's laced-up party dress.
"I know you're not afraid of deer. What's really bothering you?"
I shake my head, unable to put my unease into words. Instead, I force a smile. Just thinking about facing another shade so soon, especially since it's probably grown stronger while we were worrying about Duke Bevan and the festival yesterday. But we've got this, right? After last night, I'm all the more eager to move into those palace rooms.
"We've got this."
Evander presses his lips hard against mine, stealing my breath and sending heat through me. He draws back, grinning like he did the time we hiked to the top of a mountain just outside the city to catch the sunrise.
"Now come on," he says, giving my hair a playful tug. "We've got to find the shade before Jax."
I give him a look. "Did you two
make a bet?"
Evander winks, then draws his sword.
"Absolutely."
We march through the gate's intense glow and emerge into a field of poppies bordered by distant mountains. The blossom's lurid red color reminds me once again of Master Nicanor. I shake my head to clear it, then touch the whistle around my neck as I search the shadows. The liquid fire potion sits on my belt beside the usual vials of blood, milk, and honey, its presence giving me confidence in the near darkness. Out of the corner of my eye, something white flits across the field. I tense and grab my sword, Evander's name on my lips. But it's only a woman's spirit trailed by several little ones in flowing dresses. I don't see any death wounds, which means they were probably victims of a fever. The little ones stick close to their mother, gathering flowers to pass the time. As Evander gazes around the field, I close my eyes, feeling for malice or unrest. Any stain on our otherwise calm surroundings. The pathways in the Deadlands call to me with a restlessness deep in my bones that somehow pulls me toward the spot where I'll find the spirit my client needs. And when it's time to leave, the gates reel me in with a faint tugging around my navel that guides my steps until I see the familiar glow. But I've never been able to sense a shade, contrary to what Jack seems to think. And tonight is no different. A long, shrill whistle blast cuts across the field, and my pulse quickens. Evander and I sprint toward the sound, keeping to the footpath between the poppies where there aren't any holes to fall in or tangled roots to trip over. The whistle seems to have come from the east, but I don't feel the Deadlands pulling me in any particular direction. So we slow our pace to a jog as we wait for another sound, another sign. The mountains loom ahead of us, their rough peaks blue-black and ringed with mist in the permanent twilight. As we draw nearer, a narrow ravine takes shape, cast entirely in shadow by two high slopes. It appears to be the only way forward, unless the landscape shifts or we find some grappling hooks for climbing the sheer mountain faces. "What do we do now?" I pant, resting with my hands on my knees in the mountain's shadow. "I wouldn't go in there," I point to the ravine, "for all the gold in Carthia." Evander opens his mouth to answer, just as the whistle blares again, so close it's almost on top of us. "Master Simbri? Simeon? Jax?" I shout into the ravine. They should be able to hear my call, given how close the whistle sounded. But no one answers. Maybe the landscape on the other side of the mountain has shifted from one valley to another, and our friends are suddenly miles away. "I don't like this," Evander murmurs, but his nerves don't show. His hands are steady on his blade as he peers into the ravine. "I hate to say it, but I don't see any way around this. If they're in trouble and we don't hurry, we'll never forgive ourselves." "Right," I nod, even though gazing into the ravine makes my stomach flip. I hate not being able to see where I'm going. "You're right, of course." I clutch the liquid fire potion in one hand and my sword in the other. Evander starts toward the ravine, but I gently push my shoulder into his chest to hold him back. "Wait. Sparrows first." I give him the best smile I can manage. There is no way I'm letting him head into the uncertain darkness and danger before me when I'm the stronger pathfinder. Slowly, I begin the descent, keeping a hand on the nearest cold rock wall for support. Tiny bits of stone tumble down ahead of me, jarred loose by my first tentative step. I try to listen for the moment the stones stop skittering, to gauge the distance to the bottom. But the darkness swallows up the sound of their fall much too quickly for my liking. I count my steps, 10 total, before Evander's voice reaches me. "Try to feel your way along the walls," he calls as the blackness presses closer around me. "And remember to breathe, Sparrow. I'm right behind." His words are cut short by a jagged, guttural scream. I whirl around, gazing upward to the ravine's entrance. Silhouetted against the twilight, Evander dangles in the air, a large, bony hand plunged right through his middle. Scarlet seeps from the wound, and as my head spins,
as I fight not to fall to my knees at the sight, something makes the shrill whistle we heard before.
Now I understand. The giant shade was baiting us, hunting us when we thought we were hunting it. Somehow, I cram my whistle into my mouth with a shaking hand and blow into it with as much breath as I can muster. My stomach drops to the ravine floor far below as Evander's eyes turn glassy, and the creature pulls its hand free, carelessly dropping him and then picking him up again as if he's a toy that doesn't quite hold its interest. He's so still. I'm afraid he's not breathing. Please, by Vaya's grace, let him be breathing. I force my shaking legs to run back up the short stretch of rocky path I descended, closing the distance between the shade and me. The monster lifts Evander's limp arm to tear it off, and I take aim, throwing my vial of liquid fire right at its chest. But it easily swats the potion away like a bug. A cloud of blue flames explodes in a patch of white flowers. The shade is momentarily distracted, so I try again, drawing my blade, gazing into the pitch-dark holes where its eyes should be. I slice clean through one of the monster's arms, freeing Evander from its grip. Black liquid spatters my face and chest. It reeks like spoiled fish and burns my skin. The shade's growl echoes through the mountains as it picks me up with its remaining arm and squeezes me so hard my sword drops from my limp hand. I twist in the monster's grasp, trying to get a look at Evander, but the shade's strength is overpowering, squashing what little air is left in my lungs. It easily stands twice my height, the largest shade I've ever seen. The monster carries me toward a field, angling me so I'm able to turn my head and see him. Evander. Or what was Evander? My heart rattles sickly in my chest as his broken body shimmers beneath my gaze. His open, staring eyes reflect the twilight. And it's then I realize there's nothing of the one I love left in there. No hope for a healer's magic. Nothing I can say. No one I can bribe, or punch, or kill to get him back. The monster flexes its bony hands, tearing into my skin. White hot lightning flashes behind my eyes, and blood, my blood, sprays a crimson arc on a bed of lilies. They shouldn't be here. They mean beauty, in a world where nothing will ever be beautiful again. I collapse, watching my blood pool around me as the shade crouches near my face, the few tendrils of greasy black hair still clinging to its skull brush my cheek as it sniffs my head. I don't struggle. I don't care. My life? It doesn't matter anymore. Not now. Not without Evander. The shade unhinges its jaw wide enough to fit my head in its mouth, revealing its pointed teeth and blackened tongue. But before those teeth can snap my head from my neck, the monster snarls almost reluctantly at something in the distance and bounds off into the darkness. Chapter 9. Voices circle above me, beside me, over and under and around again, a baffling current of sound I can't trace.
Daniel's on his way,
Simeon declares breathlessly. Footsteps pound down a corridor.
She's dying! We should have stayed together!
Jax roars, followed by a sound like wood splintering. I don't have to open my eyes to know he's put his fist through a wall. A door bangs open, and suddenly, someone's touching my head, my waist. Their fingers are sticky. Warmth rushes over me like someone's dunked me in a bucket of hot water. "She's going to make it," Daniel says, his voice taut as a bowstring. "How do you know?" Simeon sniffles and draws a shaky, wet breath. Another wave of heat crashes into me. Then comes pain all over, like a thousand knives being plunged into my skin at once without mercy. Finally comes surrender. Welcome nothingness. I can't do it. I'm not going. I'm 10 years old again, and Evander and Master Simbri watch with mingled surprise and worry as I flop down in the cool summer grass, bathed in the bluish light of a gate to the Deadlands. This will be our first time entering the spirit world, and I'm more afraid than I've ever been. I don't want to let go of the firm ground that cradles me, the wind that combs my hair, or the stars that make silver freckles on Evander's cheeks as he kneels beside me. I don't know what the Deadlands hold, and I don't care, because this is the world I love.
Come on, I'll race you.
Evander shoots me a grin, then nods to the gate.
Loser buys winter sweets for a month.
When I don't move, he adds in a whisper,
"You're faster than me. I'd take the wager."
I shake my head and look away, not wanting him to see my tears. "All right, then." Evander springs to his feet. He dashes toward the gate, his face pinched with concentration, his unruly dark bangs obscuring his jewel blue eyes. I can't help but watch, holding my breath as he sticks one foot through the low gate. Master Simbri hides her expression behind her hand, but I spot a flicker of a smile. Evander's leg disappears up to the ankle, then the knee.
"It doesn't hurt. I'm all right," he shouts, grinning.
He starts to pull back, to return to us, but leaning into the gate threw him off balance. He flails his arms as he disappears into the blue light completely, stealing my breath. I leap up. 3 swift bounds and I'm through the gate, landing right on top of Evander on the other side. We're in a damp tunnel that's not so different from the tunnels in our world.
"Did it hurt?" he whispers through the dark. "Is this place as awful as you imagined?"
I shrug. All I knew in the moment Evander disappeared was that I had to go after him, no matter the cost. Not even the Deadlands could be awful with him by my side. My partner.
"Evander,"
I mumble, surprising myself with how groggy I sound.
"No, sweet sister," Simeon answers, a hitch in his voice,
as I open my eyes and blink the grit from them. His face becomes clearer, from his messy hair to his waxy skin and his eyes rimmed with red. There's an open book in his lap, its pages crumpled, the ink running in places.
"You look like shit,"
I blurt, putting a hand to my aching head without bothering to try sitting up. My whole body aches, and I don't think it's up for the challenge.
"Rough night?"
My mouth is dry, and I have to pause to lick my lips.
"Where are we?"
I gaze around the plain but soothing room. The afternoon sun streams through the window, bathing bland portraits of lemon blossoms and cypress trees on all 4 walls, and a wilting vase of flowers on the table opposite the bed in warm light. We're in the palace, in the healer's wing.
"Where is he? Where's Evander?"
I grip Simeon by his tunic and shake him so hard his book slips to the floor. He gently pries away my shaking fingers.
"I'm so sorry, Sparrow," he says, his voice hoarse. "We couldn't save him."
The noise that escapes me is like the last breath of the dying. Pain burns through me, swallowing me up, like the yawning blackness of the Deadlands ravine. Evander's dying scream rings in my ears as the healer's room shimmers before my eyes, becoming darker, sunless as the place where I last saw Evander's body. The stink of the Shade's flesh fills my nostrils. Its breath washes over me, ready to devour me as I lie helpless, watching the shell that was Evander, foolishly begging it to move. My scream startles a bird from the windowsill.
"Shh, Sparrow,"
Simeon touches my shoulder, and I fight to stop screaming.
"I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry."
He stretches out beside me, the way we used to sleep in our shared bed at the convent, and repeats the words until my scream becomes a whimper. Daniel sweeps into the room carrying a tray. His eyes are more bloodshot than Simeon's.
"We're going to make you better," he says, "which is what Evander would want."
He sounds defeated.
"That's all we can do."
"Don't talk about him like he's dead,"
I shout, my voice breaking over the words. Daniel bows his head.
"Of course, my mistake."
He sets his tray down on a high table and begins pouring a dazzling blue liquid into a glass. Simeon holds me against him, and I put my hands over his, clinging to them.
"I hurt, Sai."
I sound like a child, but I can't make myself stop any more than I can stop my body from shaking.
"I can't take it. I can't."
Daniel strides to my bedside, smoothing back my hair and holding the glass of blue drink to my lips.
"I've healed all your wounds, Sparrow. The only pain you feel is in here."
He taps his head, his coal-lined eyes glistening.
"I can't heal the mind. No mage can. But this should help. Drink up." "What is it?"
I manage.
"A tonic to soothe the nerves."
Even through the haze of pain, I remember that the usual calming tonic is gray and smokes at the surface.
"Are you sure?"
Daniel almost smiles at that.
"This one is stronger than those we normally give. It'll help. Trust me."
Somehow, between sobbing breaths, I drain the glass. It tastes like the small, hard green apples the Sisters of Death sometimes use in their pies. I close my eyes when Daniel takes away the glass, suddenly exhausted. I don't want to scream anymore. I don't want to do much of anything. I can only think of Evander, the Deadlands, and the Shade, but almost like an outsider. I know I should be hurting, but the pain can't sink its hooks as deep into me as it did moments before I drank the potion.
"How is she?" someone asks from out of sight.
My head is too muddled to place her voice right away, but I recognize her long red braid when it swishes past the door. Master Simbri doesn't come in. Instead, she draws Daniel into the hallway, and I don't have the strength to wonder why. With Simeon's arms around me, I lie back and listen to his heartbeat, to the vibrant rhythm of life, until I slide into the nothingness of a dreamless sleep. The sun still rises and sets, like it always has. It seems cruel that it wouldn't stop, just for a little while, to show how much darker the world is without Evander in it. I stop looking at the sun. Without it, one day blurs into the next, until 2 or 3 or 5 have gone by. Walking alone down the palace corridor that leads to Jax's room, to my room, and a few doors beyond that, to Evander's former room, I have no destination in mind, nothing to fill my days. I'm always alone now, even when someone is right beside me. Footsteps jar me out of my drug-induced daze long enough to recognize Daniel striding toward me, wearing his sturdy cotton healer's whites and the gold pin with double turquoise gems that signifies his master status. He opens his mouth to say something, but my head spins violently, and the polished marble corridor becomes a blur as I sink to my knees. The 6th dizzy spell in as many days. Cool, gentle hands smooth my hair back from my forehead. Evander? My heart skips as I gaze into the bluest eyes in all of Carthia. No, he says, frowning. But I'd know that voice, that face, those eyes anywhere. He kneels beside me, his forehead lined with concern, trying to get a better look at me. But I fling my arms around him, frantic, knocking the breath from him. How is this possible? I laugh. It's you! Odessa. Evander frowns harder still, leaning away from me. I pull him near, surprised by his resistance. I thought you were dead, I whisper fiercely into his neck. Odessa! Evander gives my shoulders a sharp shake, and suddenly, in his place is Daniel. He's kneeling on the floor beside me, gazing into my face with so much worry. I'm not him, Odessa. You're having delusions. I cross my arms and shake my head. I know he's right, but I don't want to believe him. If delusions are the only way to see Evander, then so be it. I'll take what I can get. I can heal your body again and again, Daniel says distantly, like he's talking to someone else even though he's looking right at me. But I don't know what else to try for your mind. You look dead on your feet, Sparrow. Tears slide down my face, seeping onto Daniel's fingers. The look he's giving me shifts from one of worry to something worse. Pity. Lost girl, his eyes say. Broken girl. He bows his head like everyone else does when they see me lately. It's like they're scared that if they hold my gaze too long, if they look too deep, they'll lose something that matters to them, too. Daniel! I don't recognize the cracked voice coming out of my mouth as I tug on a shirt sleeve. I need more of that calming potion to keep the nightmares at bay. They aren't just happening at night, but Daniel doesn't need to know that. He also doesn't need to know how much they dull my mind, or he might take them away. And then, I can't say what I'll do with myself. Daniel nods reluctantly. I'm glad it's helping. He hauls me to my feet, keeping an arm securely around my waist. But if you have any more of these delusions, let me know, will you? And we'll find you a different tonic. Right. Sure, I shrug him off. I can still stand on my own, see? There's that stranger's voice again.
Okay,
Daniel says softly. He gazes down the hall, like he was headed somewhere, then looks at me again.
Let me help you back to your room, at least.
I shake my head.
I'm actually going for a walk. Sparrow, please tell me how you're really...
Turning my back on him, I continue down the hall. Slower than normal, but moving just fine without anyone's help. I pass my room, taking my time as I head toward Vander's, until I hear Daniel's boots clicking down the hall in the opposite direction. One twist of the cold doorknob, and I'm inside Evander's empty palace quarters. There's a wardrobe, a desk and chair, a tall painted vase full of fake and very dusty black poplar branches. Their flowers are his favorite, a symbol of courage. And a bed with a basic blue quilt on it. There's not even a hint of his sandalwood, cut grass, and leather smell in here. None of his silly drawings or maps scrawled on the bare walls. In all our years together, I think we've used this room maybe a handful of times, including after the recent festival. As my fingers touch the quilt, a memory springs to mind. Me, sitting on this very bed. Evander, facing me, armed with what seemed like an entire closet full of bandages, patching me up after sparring practice, mending a small cut beneath my eye as I tried to rub ointment on his bruises. We were both too proud to see a healer after Master Simbri showed us how a real warrior fights. Shaking my head to clear it, I stagger to the desk and pull open the single drawer there, searching for a distraction. There's nothing inside but a dead fly. I don't know what I thought I'd find. Letters, maybe, which Evander had written to help me through this difficult time. But no one expected this, least of all him. I sink into the rough wooden chair by the desk. I shouldn't have come here. This room is as Evanderless as the rest of the world, a world I'm stuck in without him. So when I turn to face the bed, a tremor of cold runs through me as I meet the midnight blue eyes of the young man sitting on it. He looks more polished than the Evander I knew. Not one dark hair out of place or a hint of stubble on his jaw. He doesn't say anything, but he appears real enough. Real or not, I need him. Since you've been gone, I don't even feel right in my own skin anymore, I tell him, breaking the silence. I wonder if he can speak. After a long silence, I go on. It's like I'm missing a part, a lung, or a kidney, and the rest of me can't figure out how to work together without that one piece. My throat tightens, but I force more words out somehow. I finally spent the whole night lying beside you, without having to run back to some other bed before sunup so your mother wouldn't know. It wasn't like I imagined it would be, though. You were just a cold shell. But I guarded you until it was time to prepare for... The fist of grief wrapping around my neck silences me for a moment, and the shadow of Evander on the bed flickers beneath my gaze. They're having your funeral tomorrow, I continue shakily. And I'm sorry, but I'll have to close my eyes when they put your coffin in the ground. It's too much like saying goodbye, and I can't do that. I won't. Evander was a necromancer, a cruel little voice.